This is Nachyomi, Sefer Shmuel Aleph, chapter 25. Naval is a very wealthy but not very pleasant person who is married to a lovely and wise woman named Avigail. David and his men had provided protection and support to Naval's shepherds while they led their flocks to graze in Carmel. And according to the ancient Near Eastern common law, this meant that David's men were entitled to a portion of the proceeds gained from those sheep. Spring arrives, and Naval prepares to celebrate the annual shearing of the sheep, a festival that has traditionally been quite popular in rural areas across the globe. David dispatches messengers to Naval, who wish him well, bless him, and request that as payment for the services they rendered to them in the wilderness, Naval send food and provisions back with them to David's camp. Naval flatly refuses and denigrates David, calling him a disobedient slave of Shaul, who is rebelling against his master, as so many slaves are doing nowadays. When David hears the report of Naval's response, he is very angry and he prepares to take vengeance on the house of Naval. He arms and mobilizes his troops and they begin marching in the direction of Naval's residence. In the meantime, one of the shepherds of Naval approaches Avigail and tells her about the exchange he witnessed between Naval and the men of David. The shepherd emphasizes that the claim of the messengers is true. They did provide excellent security for the flocks of Naval in the wilderness and are deserving of ample reward. Without telling Naval, Avigail instructs her servants to arrange an elaborate care package of foodstuffs that she will personally deliver to David. When David meets Avigail, she prostrates before him and attempts to persuade him not to attack her household. She argues that many innocent people will be killed. She herself didn't even know about the request from David. She would have honored it. And she didn't deserve to die because it was rejected by Naval. Furthermore, she says that her husband is a disgusting person who's not worth David's trouble. And finally, she says that it's better that David not ruin his reputation and sully himself with bloodshed like this. He should trust in the judgment of Hashem, who will visit punishment upon the wicked. Avigail then gives David the provisions she brought for him. David is convinced by the reasoning of Avigail and decides to cancel the operation against Naval. He's deeply thankful to her for her intervention and promises to remember her in the future when he ascends to the throne. Avigail returns home to find her drunk husband partying wildly. She says nothing to him that night, but in the morning she tells him about all that happened and how she saved the household from a potential onslaught at the hands of David. Naval enters a state of shock for 10 days and finally dies. David recognizes this as Hashem's providential involvement on his behalf, preventing him from having to deal with Naval directly and nonetheless punishing Naval as he deserved. He sends for Avigail, proposing that she now become his wife. At first, she declines very humbly, but eventually they do get married. David has another wife by the name of Ahinoam. Michal, his first spouse, had been taken from him and reassigned by Shaul to another husband, Palti ben Laish. Incidentally, the pasuk that describes the fate of Michal is not really a part of the same paragraph as the chapter. This chapter, in a very unusual way, concludes with the first sentence of the next paragraph. Sometimes that happens in Tanakh because the paragraphs and the chapters were determined by a tradition, by Jewish tradition, and the chapters were determined by others. So sometimes they don't quite line up. It's interesting to note how the roles are reversed in this chapter. David, until now, was the pursued one, the victim. Now he's the pursuer coming after Naval. Avigail, on the other hand, tries to placate David with reasoning that's basically the same reasoning that David gave to Shaul to stop his chase. In other words, that innocent lives should be spared. In this case, Avigail and her household should be spared. In the case of David with Shaul, that David himself hasn't done anything wrong, that Hashem is the ultimate judge, that it's not appropriate for a noble individual to lower himself by punishing someone who is insignificant. Here we're talking about David punishing Naval. There we were talking about Shaul punishing David. Here, as in the previous chapter, the pursuer abandons the chase. In the case of Shaul, it was only a temporary pause because of the persuasive arguments against it. Now, the irony of the sudden shift in David cannot be lost on the reader. David, too, can become a Shaul-type person when he is crossed. Even the greatest leader can lose perspective sometimes, and even David benefits from having another Davidic personality around to keep him focused and grounded. This helps us understand why the text describes Avigail as a wise woman and why David wants to marry her after the death of Naval. Not just because it's a type of conquest and it's a type of revenge against Naval, but because she's almost like the female version of David himself. She has the intelligence, the prudence, the humility, the practicality that have defined him from the outset. She is uniquely matched to David as a spouse and will be capable of providing him with the support he needs to stay principled when the temptation to do otherwise is overwhelming. Another literary motif in this chapter and some others is the evocation of scenes and phrases that remind us of Esav from the Torah, the brother of Yaakov. Now, the most basic and obvious connection between David and Esav is that David is described as ruddy or of reddish complexion, and we know that Esav is called Admoni, also red. Both David and Esav are accompanied by entourages of 400 men. Yaakov went out to meet Esav with elaborate gifts and bowed on the ground and spoke to him in very humble terms, just like in this case, Avigail bows down and brings a gift and so on to forestall the massacre at the hands of David. So we see a very similar scene here. The language of the chapter even contains paraphrases or quotations from the story of the meeting of Yaakov and Esav, such as Avigail's instructions to her messengers that they should bring the gifts and that she will be behind them, among other examples that the careful reader will be able to discern. The question for us, though, is not what are the parallels, what are the literary connections, but what's the conceptual link between Esav and David. I'd like to suggest a possibility that the answer lies in the book of Bereshit in Parashat Vayishlach. In Parashat Vayishlach, it mentions that Esav's descendants quickly established a monarchy in Edom, many generations before any king reigned over the Jewish people. So Esav is kind of the biblical prototype of a kingdom-founding or a dynasty-founding individual. And by portraying David in terms that remind us of Esav, the text draws our attention to the fact that David has the same qualities of strength, assertiveness, courage, ambition that enabled Esav to establish his monarchy. These characteristics can serve as powerful instruments for good. However, when they're not harnessed for the good, they can be destructive. In this narrative in particular, we see that David's Esav-like passion and ambition may have caused him tremendous harm had Avigail not saved the day with her intervention.